Amateur presentation.
Welcome back to another Untitled Movie Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Rohrbeck, alongside, he's allergic to tomatoes, but he is tomato meter approved, Eric Marchin.
Happy April. April.
Oh, we're kicking. That's why we waited, you know? Yeah. It's not because it was Easter weekend.
Or that you're sick.
Or I'm, yeah, I barely could get out of bed the last couple days today. And you're getting an audio only episode today, guys. And I'm sorry if the audio quality is a little lesser than what you're used to. I'm just sitting on the couch with a blanket on me and having a McDonald's cold brew to try to cure my ailments.
How is it, by the way?
Okay, here's the thing, Eric. We'll get to Godzilla and Kong, New Empire soon. All right, everybody, that's what we're reviewing today. We're going to go full spoilers. This movie's been out since Friday. It's doing well. You've probably seen it or you don't care at this point. So we will be spoiling it. But first, a review of the McDonald's cold brew. This is my fourth time ordering it. Were the first three times messed up, Eric? Possibly. So with any new product at any place, especially a McDonald's where, you know, quality differs at different locations, you know, it varies. I was excited to try a new cold brew. I am a cold brew connoisseur. I love cold brew. I drink an obscene amount of it. Every morning I start, I either make my own at home or I love getting Starbucks cold brew. I love it when they have it on tap. Dunkin' cold brew, surprisingly amazing. Some cold brews, not so great, whatever, but just I love that injection of way too much caffeine, and just it's my little treat in the morning. All right, so excited. I like McDonald's coffee. Their iced coffee, hit or miss, but better than Tim Hortons, probably not as good as Starbucks when I'm ranking the basic iced coffees. And I switched to cold brew as well because it's less acidic and it gives me less heartburn and acid reflux. I sound like an old man. So anyways, go to McDonald's, first time I order, and I drink my cold brew with no sugar and just some oat milk usually, or if they don't have oat milk, regular milk's fine or whatever. So the first time, three times I've ordered it, the black cold brew, but then added milk to it, like when you do the automatic ordering. So I think that's fucking it up, where they think I want milk and sugar in it. They think it's like how you would, when you normally order an iced coffee or a cold brew at most places, it comes default with milk or cream and liquid sugar. And you either have to specify, but the thing is with cold brew, it usually comes black. So I think the first three times they added sweetener to it, and I was just like, what the fuck is going on? Or I thought they might have just, it was sweetened cold brew, like even if you ordered it normal. So the first three times I'm like, is it my fault? Because I even went into a McDonald's and I looked a woman in the eye and I said, ma'am, two milks, please, no sugar. No sugar. I don't want any sugar. I'm not ordering from the machine. I'm looking you in your eye and I'm asking this. And then I get it. I take a sip. I'm like, it tastes like it has sugar. And then I call a woman over. I go, excuse me, did you make this with sweetener? And she goes, what does it say? And I go, it says two milks. And she's like, then it only has two milks. And I was like, okay. And then I didn't know what to do. And then I just left. And then I was like, all right, I'm not going to argue with this woman. It clearly, I think someone put sugar in this thing, just thinking it was default. So anyways, long story short, I ordered today because I'm sick. I'm like, I need something. I need coffee. Caffeine does help. Or I'm just kidding myself and whatever. I think caffeine does help when you're taking like Advil and shit like that. But anyways, I ordered it and I just ordered it black. I'm like, I'm just going to order it black and I will add my own milk or sugar to it. And then today tastes amazing. It's perfect. So hot tip, if you don't want sugar, don't get them to do it. I'm going to start asking for it on the side. Just order a black cold brew and just get whatever shit on the side and do it myself because no one can be trusted. Anyways, Godzilla the New Empire. I'm feeling like garbage. Let's talk about it. Directed by Adam Wingard. Written by his frequent collaborator, Simon Barrett, and also written by Terry Rossio and Jeremy Slater, and starring, you know, a reteaming of Dan Stevens and Adam Wingard, which I was really excited about. I love them, their team up in The Guest, so that was exciting to me. But Eric, enough about me and my cold brew. How are you doing? and my sickness.
I'm good. I'm good. It's, you know, it's we're getting out of Easter now. We're getting into April. April as we're reviewing Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire, and just, you know, kind of getting ready, I think, for what will be a little bit of a bare bones summer. It seems like it's going to be not as exciting as last year, because there's really no Barbenheimer phenomenon this year, and there's not a lot of big movies to expect. But the success of this film does say quite a bit in terms of this being the fifth in the MonsterVerse saga.
Not including the TV show.
Not including the TV show. Starting 10 years ago, Matt, you know, the That's Gareth crazy. Edwards movie was 2014.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, you look at it in one way, and I think this might be an interesting conversation to have, you know, outside of the film, because I think when you're reviewing the movie, ultimately, you know, it's nitpicking in a lot of ways.
It is what it is, right?
You get what you pay for, in the sense of you have
smashy monsters.
You know, battling each other, people, you know, looking and reacting to it, and then the movie ends. The best version of this is probably the 2014, you know, in terms of the American stuff. Obviously, you know, the classic 54 version is always going to be the best Godzilla adaptation. And then, this, you know, the classic stop motion animation King Kong will always be the best version of that. But with these movies, like the Godzilla franchise, they do get goofier and more colorful, and you kind of feel like, okay, well, you know, the old saying of check your brain at the door comes into play with this. So critically speaking, I think an interesting conversation to have, because the film is very divisive in terms of fans versus critics, is to have that conversation, because you've even noticed it a little bit with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, where, you know, the fans will stand, you know, tall against any kind of, not even negative criticism, but constructive in terms of what maybe doesn't work, or just what you're seeing in terms of someone that maybe isn't a fan of the franchise. And, you know, we've talked about this before with Star Wars, where it's becoming more and more toxic in terms of having those conversations, or you can't even have those conversations anymore, because it's almost become like politics or religion, where it's too hot of a topic.
Yeah.
But looking
at it, doesn't become enjoyable talking about it anymore, right?
Yeah. It's not fun. And with this, ultimately, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
My biggest problem with the film, you know, it's not that Godzilla isn't in the movie that much. Godzilla has never been, you know, he's basically like Batman, you know.
He has 10 minutes of screen time every movie, yeah.
Yeah. The problem with it being called Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, is that you're being sold on a team-up movie. And that team-up doesn't happen until much later on in a film that is almost 2 hours long. And you begin to feel that length after a while. And I think that maybe if it was just a half an hour shorter, they get to the team up a little bit quicker, the movie would work in terms of being just a fun, satisfying pre-summer blockbuster. But where you are now, you have so much setup in that first act.
Hollow Earth, bro.
And the Iwi tribe and sort of, you know, Rebecca Hall's connection to Kaylee Hoddle's character and sort of the adoptive daughter and, you know, trying to figure out what messages she's interpreting that she's either dreaming about or having these kind of surreal kind of like daydreams. And, you know, like all of that feels like, okay, well, why do we need, you know, 20 to 30 minutes worth of, you know, establishing inconsequential human characters? Because nobody comes to these movies, even if they are as
to learn about the Iwi tribe. No one, sorry.
But even for the actors.
Yeah.
You know, like, nobody comes to this for Rebecca Hall or even Dan Stevens.
I did a little bit. Like, I wanted that to be fun, and he does have fun in the movie for a little bit.
Yeah, but he's the eccentric vet that, you know, when you first see him, he's listening to all your dad's favorite songs from the 70s and 80s, and then he's extracting a decaying tooth from Kong. That's a lot of fun. And he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt. And, you know, he gets at one point by Brian Tyree Henry's character, who returns, references as Ace Ventura. Yes, as podcast, which also, again, you know, falls nicely into the fandom of both of these movies. And you're just watching this and you're thinking to yourself, okay, these actors are way too good for this material. But this has also become the norm of blockbusters, where you look at films, you know, in the late 80s into the early 2000s. When you get a big name in a film, that was usually like the crown jewel. It's not that every role needs to be filled with somebody that's more capable in a part that they're not really needed for. Like, I like Brian Tyree Henry a lot. I think his performance is good. I hate the character. I find the character annoying, but the performance is good. And he's so fine, much better than the material he's given to work with. But that's a role that didn't need to be played by him. In the same way that it's like Rebecca Hall. Like, you look at all the Godzilla movies, like the American ones.
And the Kong movies, they have crazy actors in them. If you make that list.
They have B-movie actors. And that's
you mean the older ones. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. But that's what's needed, right? Like, because like you could even.
I don't disagree, but.
Yeah, well, you look at the American re-edit of the original Godzilla movie with Raymond Burr. And then Raymond Burr came back in the 85 version or the 84 version. And with that movie, it's like Raymond Burr is like the perfect actor for that kind of film, because he's not, I don't want to say he's a bad actor per se, but he is the type of actor that maybe would not be, you know, Jimmy Stewart or Cary Grant. He's not one of those guys. He's a B to C level.
But that's why I think Dan Stevens works in this, I think. But
I think Dan Stevens is like, I get it in terms of the reunion thing, but I think even he is a cut above. Like, you look at the Ninja Turtle movies, the Michael Bay produced Ninja Turtle movies. Mm-hmm. Having an Amell, Stephen Amell in that is perfect. Like, that's the kind of level you want in something like this. When you start throwing prestigious actors in it, and not just Godzilla, like I think a lot of blockbusters now, you're getting, like, when Jack Nicholson was in Batman.
That's what Hollywood is now, though. That's what it is.
I know, right? And that's the thing. And sometimes I feel like it's like we're overdoing it. It's like ordering like a nice greasy burger at a fast food place. You don't want
truffles. Yeah,
and you don't want truffles on it.
Yeah, and I know people have been comparing this, of like the Godzilla Minus One being the steak and this being the cheeseburger. And I do think both have a place and both can exist. And I don't think one ruins the other. I tweeted that out. That was a little hyperbolic. But like, yeah, I thought this movie was totally fine. And I am a fan of the MonsterVerse. Like, I've defended this kind of franchise and I've had fun with these movies for what they were. I just think that the fifth movie in, I haven't watched Monarch yet, even though I love Kurt Russell and I love Wyatt Russell. I just kind of have become a little kind of worn down by the franchise. Like, I don't know what I'm looking for. I like smashy action figures, crossovers, big kaiju fights. There's a fun tag team match at the end of this movie. It just takes way too long to get there. There's some fun sequences of, you know, Kong using a baby Kong as a fucking weapon and like shit like
that.
His own
Diddy Kong.
Yeah, and it does. There are some fun moments. I just almost wish it went further. I feel like this franchise it started off very serious in that Gareth Edwards Godzilla movie, and then it got goofier and goofier, like you said. But I almost feel like they're still straddling that line of being like, this is horrible shit that's happening to the world when these giant kaiju come and you see the destruction that they have and things like that. But then they try to be colorful and fun. And I just feel like that balance is a little bit off. Like, I think Wingard is that guy that can have that balance. I think The Guest has that great balance. Your Next has that great balance of like serious or horror and goofy fun moments. And I think he's done fine in these two movies. I actually liked Godzilla versus Kong more. I like the Mecha Godzilla stuff more. It's that one franchise that I've enjoyed most of the movies, but I could not tell you anything that happens. It's like when people compare it to a fast food burger, that's exactly what it is. It's because I fucking inhale it like a monster, no pun intended, and then I feel like garbage, and then I forget that I did it like minutes later or something like that, and it just evaporates from your brain. And there's so many characters in these movies and so many things happen. They're trying to build lore with Monarch and things like that, and really you just want to see giant kaiju. I turn to you. I like this franchise. I'm reiterating that. But I turned to you when we were walking home and I was like, is this the first time we've seen Mothra? And you're like, no, she's been in like three movies. And I'm like, couldn't tell you what the hell happened in any of them. And like,
and that's the other problem with this franchise. It's so ephemeral that once you've finished watching it, it almost completely dissipates from your mind.
And I think that there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. I think cinema can be popcorn movies, and you just go for a good time, and it doesn't have to have a big message. It doesn't have to have a deeper meaning. It can just be action figures smashing against each other. But after a while, that becomes a little stale. And I just found that in this, especially I think that there's a horrible lack of scale in this movie. And I know that after so many movies, they're like, okay, well, we can't just have them in cities destroying everything, fighting each other the whole time. We have to give it some story or plot and do this whole Hollow Earth thing. And then even Hollower Earth, stupid. There's a lot of dumb shit, which is like funny, but it's just after a while. And then the whole Iwi tribe stuff, it spends so much time in Hollow Earth that one, the fights down there, I feel like loses a sense of scale. Like, it looks like I'm watching Planet of the Apes, and which is, I love Planet of the Apes. I love the
which is a superior franchise, but also it has some crossover there because you have Kong liberating these other apes that have been enslaved by the Scar King.
Oh yeah. And that who also looks like Koba. Like it's, you know,
it feels like Caesar, you know, liberating in the almost in the Ten Commandments kind of way.
So when you have those big fights happening down there, and yes, I mentioned him using Diddy Kong as like a club, which is funny, but like it does lose that scale that I'm looking for when you see these giant kaiju fighting and you see the humans. That's where the humans are used best, when they're in the city. And I know you have a point too of being like, we've seen that so often that you become numb to even that stuff, even though it's horrifying what's happening.
Well, even desensitized.
Yeah. And I think when you're down in Hollow Earth, though, I'm like, this isn't exciting to me. I don't know. It just looks like chimps fighting each other. And then you spend so much time with the Iwi tribe and this young girl. And I agree with you that, like, I'd rather into, like, the lore of, like, Monarch researching all these kaiju and, like, on Earth. And they had elements of that. But then when you bring in this whole Iwi tribe, it just gets goofy in, like, not a fun way either. Like, it's just like, I'm sorry. None of this shit is working, and we're spending so much time on it. No one is here for this. And I think that's where I became kind of bored or frustrated, because like you said, the movie's almost 2 hours, which isn't necessarily long for modern like movie standards. But
for this, it is.
For this, where you want to be in and out, you just want to see cool fight scenes, you just want to see cool choreography with cool music and cool synthy score, which it does have some. You get those little Adam Wingard elements. But I think I'm just ready. I love Adam Wingard. I just want him maybe now to do something smaller. You know, when these guys are kind of taken away from you into big budget filmmaking, and I'm, you know, there's some of them that do super well, and I think Adam Wingard's done well with these two movies for what they are. But I would like for him to do something a little bit more interesting and smaller.
Smaller scale.
Yeah. And I'm sure this is done well enough so they'll do a third one. So maybe he'll finish his Godzilla Kong trilogy crossover thing, right? Which I'm sure he will, because money talks. But I thought it was fine. Like, I really thought it was okay. I don't think it's horrible. I don't think it's great. I think, like, if you're into the MonsterVerse and you like Godzilla and Kong, we've already seen this, you'll probably mildly enjoy it to really enjoy it, right? And then if you don't care about action movies with just action and stupid human characters that mean nothing, you're not going to like it. And then if you're like us, where you watch so many movies and where you kind of just become numb to it all and then get worn down after the fifth in a franchise, I think you need to, I guess the crossover was that thing to differentiate it in the last film, but I think when you've already seen that and then you're just adding different kaiju and the other giant monster ends up being another monkey, is just like,
well, it becomes a superhero thing, yeah, right? Where yeah. you're just seeing two similar designed, you know, creatures in this case fighting each other up until the third act. And, yeah. you know, you lose a little bit of that excitement. And then, you know, when you look at all the kind of cheer-worthy moments that the film is trying to create, that also loses a little bit of its muster, you know, to the point where, like, you know, Kong has this cool power glove, you know, talking about yeah. Nintendo. And it kind of, once you get to that point, it's not as interesting as it would be if, you know, we hadn't gotten three or four or five other scenes where it's like, oh, you know, like, look at this sort of like, you know, cheer-worthy moment, or the way this character lands or punches this other thing. And it just becomes, you know, you mentioned the mind-numbing quality of it, but you lose any real engagement with the material in terms of it being a fight film. And, you know, by the time the movie ends, you'll get your fill of it. You know, you get what you pay for, but ultimately, you know, by the time the next one comes out, we'll be in the same place again, where we'll be like, was Mothra in the last one again? And that's kind of where it all kind of goes. And that's why I also think like something like Godzilla Minus One is interesting, that, you know, this is dovetailing from, you know, that winning the Oscar and reminding people what Godzilla was originally made for, you know, being a social commentary, you yeah. know, post-World War II, and also, you know, the bombing of Hiroshima and sort of the fallout of that, and, you know, the serious nature of some of the storytelling, but still somewhat melodramatic in the human performances and the story around the destruction of Japan. But with this, you know, like, I agree with you. You can have both. It might be confusing to some people to think like, oh, is the continuity, like, is it all the same? Yeah. It's just like a general moviegoer. And I get that. But we also, that also goes to the superhero thing where we have like seven Batmans now and sure, seven yeah. spider people and, you know, all this kind and of stuff.
And they go, figure it out yourself. All right.
Yeah. And so you have to kind of just let it go, because this is where we are when it comes to movie making. I do agree with you. I almost wish Wingard just let loose in a way that would more, have been right? more almost weirdly subversive, because even in this really bad, blatant product placement, did you remember the car?
Volkswagen one? Yeah.
Was it Volkswagen or was it a Kia?
It was Volkswagen.
Volkswagen.
I remember it, and I laughed and looked at you.
That shot, I do feel, goes on a couple seconds, even too long for like what an executive from that company would be like, oh, can you put this in? Or like Warner Brothers exec would be like, oh, put this in here for so many seconds. And I feel like Wingard is like, okay, well, you want it? Well, I'm going to linger on this thing even longer. And
also, the way that it shot PepsiCo Pictures, we got some Cheetos in this too. So
yeah, it looks everywhere. Like an ad for a second. Like, it looks like the end of an ad. And so
no, the Volkswagen shot is egregious. It's very funny.
But it's also very kind of funny.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted actually more of, like, do it almost in a Wayne's World kind of style where you're just, you know what, you know, go for broke, play up the fact that this is purely popcorn entertainment and, you know, have more fun with it. It feels like it's trying to break out of that mold a little bit, but then still it's like, okay, well, we've created five of these things. This is the mythology or arc we're following for these films. And a lot, I think, of the excitement was kind of blown in the last one, because Mechagodzilla was such a big deal in terms of setting that up and having Kong and Godzilla fight, that once you got to that moment, it kind of felt like that was like the natural end for this storyline. So continuing on, it almost does feel a little bit like a weird epilogue in a way. And so when you think like, okay, what are they going to do for the future, you know, they're starting to run out of Godzilla characters, because you have Biollante, which is kind of like this giant plant like creature that a dentist actually created, and then you have sort of this pollution character, Hedorah. And
did the Godzilla Minus One director just do a short film on that, or was that a different monster? You see this? It was a pollution monster kind of thing, like a garbage.
Maybe
monster.
I'd have to take a look at it, because the pollution one was done. It was the '70s. It was the early '70s. Again, it all kind of plays with social commentary because the environment was a big focus in the early '70s. So that was kind of a big deal then. And it's like this kind of gray, gross looking blob with like red eyes. It's kind of cool looking actually, but it doesn't really have any form. So you kind of look like, what are they going to do for the future? And it's like with anything that kind of like gets too big, do they bring in like another property? Like, does Legendary go to Pacific Rim and bring that in now or something like that?
Yeah, they have that. That actually would probably make the most sense. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened. To your point, like, they are running out of, you know, kaiju and things like that. And like, what other things are in the Legendary kind of universe? Canon. And Pacific Rim would make the most sense. Like, they already had Mechagodzilla. Why wouldn't you build or show that that's in the same universe? I don't know if you could make that work, or else you reboot Pacific Rim or something like that to make it fit.
They can make it fit. I mean, look at even Transformers and G.I. Joe now. It feels like, okay, well, even if it doesn't make sense narratively or it doesn't fit within the world, we'll find a space. We'll put it in there.
Yeah. What else do they have? Dune.
Sandworms?
Detective Pikachu. Mamma Mia, here we go again. So, you know, lots of stuff they could...
Godzilla versus Meryl Streep?
Yeah. Yeah, man, I don't know. I do like the MonsterVerse. I think it's one of the weirdest... not weirdest in like a, it's actually weird, but just a strange one that I feel like does really well, but I don't think anyone really cares about it all that much. I know there are hardcore Godzilla fans and hardcore Kong fans and stuff like that, that it has a rich history, and there are those people who really love those characters. So, you know, it's great that they're getting these movies, but it's that franchise that you said, 10 years, 5 movies, a TV show. I've liked most of them, but I never think about it. I can't tell you a character's name. I can't tell you which monster shows up in which movie or what, when something happens. So I'd be okay if we sunset the MonsterVerse, but I'm sure it's doing well enough that we'll get another one. So I'm going to give the movie, actually, to leave it on some positives. I did like Godzilla sleeping in the Colosseum. I thought that was cute.
That was like a part of his European tour, right?
Yeah, so I do like that, to point out some positives. I did like Dan Stevens. I wish he went further. Like, I feel like that character starts really strong and then kind of just, again, becomes another human that's there. So I like him giving him the power glove and shit like that at the end, but I feel like they could have done a little bit more with that. I like the score. Gets very synthy at times, so I'm into that. I've been listening to the Guest 2 soundtrack, which I wish was a real movie. And then Mothra's cool, I guess, but
Mothra's bae.
Yeah, but that's it. I'm gonna give the movie a 3, like a soft 3. I think it's fine. I think you'll probably mildly enjoy it if you like these movies, or really enjoy it, but I'm not going to think about it anytime soon, and I have no plans on ever rewatching it. So,
yeah, it's almost like the Friday the 13th series or any long running franchise, where I think talking about individual films, because they're so repetitive in their structure, or they have a formula, that it becomes difficult to talk about them individually because you're just saying the same thing over and over again. But when you're looking at it as a whole or a franchise, I think that's where the conversation can be a little bit more sort of interesting and dissecting aspects of it, because you look at, you know, 5 films over 10 years, you know, it's gone from grounded docudrama, you know, to hire, even it, some of the casting was kind of interesting at that point, with Aaron Taylor Johnson and Elizabeth Olsen going from playing siblings in the MCU
to lovers. This classic sibling to lovers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The Luke Skywalker, you know, Leia kind of thing. Although that's in reverse. And even like Bryan Cranston and talking about people that didn't need to be in certain roles, like Juliette Binoche, like, you know, like that's interesting. And then when you look at that movie and then you look at this, you're like, okay, this is really changed so much since, you know, 2014. But then you look at this one, and then you look at Adam Wingard's last movie, and then you look at the one before, and, you know, there's not a lot there other than like, okay, the color temperature. And I know a lot of people love Kong Skull Island as well, but like,
I like temperature Skull and Island things a like lot. That. Yeah.
But yeah, like even that, I can't believe I forgot that Brie Larson was one of the leads.
Tom Hiddleston, man. Like, yeah.
You know?
It's I like Skull Island. I don't remember much of King of the Monsters, but yeah, it's, I don't know, man.
I just remember King of the Monsters being very blue. And yes. That's like my biggest takeaway. So I'm a 2.5 out of 5. Like, I think it's fine. I probably could give it a 3, but looking at how good that first film is, and then subsequently there is a little bit of a diminishing returns factor here, but I think,
remember how sweaty that screening was?
Oh man, it was so sweaty.
We bring that up a lot.
So sweaty, but it was a fun experience. It's like in terms of remembering it. But yeah, it's like, okay, well, I think we'll be here in another 3 or 4 years, and we'll be talking about the same thing, unless something is drastically different, or they've added in another property, as my earbud falls out, or they've added in another property into the franchise that gives it another talking point. And so, yeah, I think like ultimately, I know I'm like one of the few people, I liked Godzilla Minus One, but I wasn't necessarily over the moon for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that is a much better film, and you can talk more about that in terms of the politics and the filmmaking, and, you know, obviously the effects won the Oscar, and those are aspects that you can kind of dive into a little bit deeper than this iteration of it.
Agreed. Thank you all for listening, or actually I would usually say, or watching, but I think I'm only going to put this up audio because I've had like a weird angle where you see my double chin and the and I look like garbage because I'm sick. So audio only. We'll be back with more reviews soon. I do want to talk about Roadhouse with you, and I do want to talk about what else did we see recently, that Ghostbusters, which we haven't really talked about together either. We'll see.
And Civil War.
Yeah, Civil War will be coming soon. We are going to be talking about that. But because I'm sick, we're just getting this one and done today, and then we'll get back to it. So, we'll get back to it. There's always something, Eric. There's always something. But please go check out our letterbox, which is Untitled_Movies. You can find all of our reviews, interviews, regular shows all over there. Eric, you have a couple interviews that you've done recently that are up on the channel and coming soon. Did you want to plug those?
Yeah, so I talked to Meredith Hama Brown for Seagrass, which is now available on VOD. I think it's one of the best movies of the year so far. and then I also talked to the co-directors of French Girl, which was also a very fun conversation and very interesting because they have a connection to Roland Emmerich, who directed the 90s Godzilla, the much beloved 90s Godzilla. So yeah, I'm enjoying that. There's some interviews coming up as well that I'm excited about that we'll share when they're done and ready to go. I don't like to jinx anything or say anything before they happen. But yeah, I enjoy doing the interviews, especially, you know, like when you find like an interesting talking point, or you just love the film.
Yeah.
It always makes it more exciting, but also just to get somebody else's perspective on something, I think is kind of interesting. And, you know, it always helps to know that the world, you know, there are other people that see the world differently compared to you, and you have to kind of open your horizons more. So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all. You can find more of my work around the internet, but mostly at untitledmoviepodcast.com. And you can follow me on all those social medias at Matt Rorabeck.
And I'm Eric March, and you can find more of my video reviews on RogersTV.com/cinemascene and on all the social media outlets, including the Twitter or X or whatever the hell it's called.
Still call it Twitter. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm going to call it Twitter. Fuck, what's his
Elon
face?
Musk, yeah.
and at EM6211.
Until next time.
Let's get it on like Diddy Kong.